Welcome back to Crossover Daily, SI's daily NBA podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Notker. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the aftermath of Game 1 of the Finals. Is there anything interesting left about this series? We'll also discuss the Sixers' decision to hire Doc Rivers. What does his arrival mean for Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid? Finally, Kyrie Irving is the gift that keeps on giving. Joining me to break all this down is SI's Jeremy Wu. Let's start the show. All right, making his return appearance to Crossover Daily. He's a staff writer at Sports Illustrated. He's currently dipping into his Halloween candy stash as we speak. It's my good buddy, Jeremy Wu. Wu, how's it going, my man?
I'm good, man. I know these orange Kit Kats outside the box, but they're literally orange, so.
Yeah, you and I are both shocked to find out that they're making Kit Kats orange colored now.
Yeah, not just the wrapper, like the actual candy.
Right, which deserves to have its own investigation, its own narrative podcast.
Maybe we'll save that. Pod.
Yeah, save that for the offseason. So kind of a lot of NBA stuff to get to today. Obviously, the NBA Finals are going on. Doc Rivers hired as the Sixers coach earlier today. We'll get to that. We'll get to some good Kyrie Irving stuff later as well. Let's start with the Finals. Obviously, the Heat. Not only are they in a 1-0 hole, Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo listed as doubtful for Game 2. Jimmy Butler rolled his ankle. He's not on the injury report. You have to wonder, though, if his effectiveness will be affected, for lack of a better phrase, in Game 2. This is pretty sad. It's kind of a bummer. How are you feeling about the Finals after Game 1? It feels like the wind has been taken out of the sails.
Yeah, no. The only people who are feeling good are the Laker fans who have been trolling me on Twitter for the last 2 months. it's like, just, I guess, the worst thing that could have happened. And not because I have a dog in the fight, because I don't, but just from the standpoint of competitive basketball. Now, we shouldn't act like it's over, but is it much less interesting? I mean, I don't see how Dragic comes back. Maybe Bam comes back, but it's tough. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, if I had to wager, I'd wager on Bam coming back in Game 2 and maybe Dragic trying to come back later in the series if the Heat somehow win a game. It's just tough, man. You know, I interviewed Dragic in September now, and you could just hear how excited he was about this team in particular. You know, for him, he's had a really up-and-down Heat career. He was brought in to play with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. Bosh got hurt. Wade left. You know, Hassan Whiteside was his pick-and-roll partner for a long time. He shared a backcourt with Wade. He shared a backcourt with Tyler Johnson. He shared a backcourt with Deion Waiters. You know, so much has gone, you know, haywire for him since he got to Miami. And now he was the leading scorer on a conference finalist. You know, he's 34 years old. And this just feels, especially for him, a brutal, brutal way for his finals to go, especially on such a weird play. I mean, for, you know, every time ESPN showed the replay of him hurting his foot, it was hard to make out how exactly he got hurt.
Yeah, it was weird. And it was like the first, I mean, there's not really even anything to microanalyze about the game. It just, like, the first quarter was kind of interesting and the Heat were playing really small because Bam was in foul trouble. And then, you know, for lack of a better word, Bam, all the injuries happened. So
yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I was looking it up, you know, I wrote about this. The Heat, I think, were plus 15 or something kind of silly like that when Dragic, Butler and Adebayo were all on the floor together. The problem is they only played 8 minutes together. So they had a brief stretch, and if somehow those guys get healthy, there's maybe that sliver of hope. But, I mean, as soon as Bam got in foul trouble and Dragic got hurt, you saw just how limited the Heat were. I think we both expect them to play maybe a little bit bigger in Game 2. It's really crazy. I mean, for the Lakers, I don't even think they have to be worried about a letdown. I think LeBron is too focused. Is there anything the Heat could do that you think would scare the Lakers even the tiniest bit in Game 2?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think scare is the right word after that. But, I mean, like, I assume Kendrick Nunn will play more. I don't think the going really small with Solomon Hill thing worked that well.
Right,
I mean,
yes.
It's really hard to say anything worked well or didn't work.
Right,
because that game
sure.
was such a... So I don't want to say, like, yes or no. But, I mean, maybe we see Myers-Leonard come in, try to be more physical with Davis. I don't really know. I mean... They're smart. They're not going to give up. They're going to figure, like, some approach out. And, you know, obviously very, very much an uphill climb. But, you know, hopefully Game 2 will be competitive. I would like to see Miami get a game just to, like, make this more of a series. But
without a doubt. It's been a long time since a 1-0 hole felt as big as this one does. You know, I was thinking about this today. we've been kind of robbed of a good finals for a long time now. I think we had a great one in 2016, but you know, you look back, 2014 wasn't very competitive. 2015, LeBron was playing great, but you know, Cleveland was without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love for practically the entire series. 2016, one of the best finals ever. The next two anticlimactic. Last year, KD and Klay both hurt. When are we going to get a good finals again? This is kind of upsetting that, especially this year, after everything the NBA went through to even make this series a possibility, it's kind of weird how we just haven't had a good championship series, or at least a compelling one, in a long time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Obviously, I don't know what the answer is. Maybe LeBron. Yeah. Maybe when LeBron retires. it's. I think it has to be just like from an objective, like, health of the NBA standpoint. Like, if the Lakers sweep, it's not. I mean, it's good because you. I mean, but no matter what happens, the Lakers are going to be on TV a billion times next year. So,
right.
But you would have wanted more of a series.
It's definitely good for the league if the Lakers win, just in terms of that's their marquee franchise. LeBron's the marquee player. You know, we're already seeing ratings troubles or whatever. I think that's marketable for the league if the Lakers win. You do have to wonder, the Lakers winning is also another win for Lakers exceptionalism, and you have to wonder how teams around the league are going to feel about a team that was kind of cobbled together in a year and a half. You know, winning the title in this fashion, I think, is going to put a little bit of a chill for front offices around the league as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the possibility of, I mean, another team like this happening when guys like, you know, when Giannis becomes a free agent, I think that's the next big thing is, you know, will he, and not to like get too much into the forecasting, but I mean, that is a looming thing that everybody's talking about right now.
For sure.
So we'll see, but go ahead.
No, it's kind of a, I don't want to use the word depressing, but it's just a bummer how this has turned out. I think there was a lot of excitement headed in this series, a lot of the storylines we were looking forward to, and it just turned on its head, not just the blowout fashion in which the Lakers won. That happens in the finals. You know, the Heat and Spurs in 2013 actually traded some blowouts before those last two crazy games. But when you couple the blowout with the injuries, it's just, I can't remember the last time I went into a finals this excited and then it turned on its head
right
so quickly.
Right.
Well, with that being said, I guess let's get to the news that's going around the NBA a little bit. Adrian Wojnarowski, I believe, had it first. Doc Rivers is going to be the coach of the 76ers. For now, obviously, they still have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons on the roster, in addition to Al Horford and Tobias Harris. What were your first thoughts when you found out about the Doc hire?
Yeah, I think it's a good move for Philly. I think, you know, obviously a team that is not that far away from you know, taking a step forward. You know, the coach is not going to be the cure-all for them. You know, they're going to have to figure out, you know, the roster is a little bit of a mess. The other cap is all tied up. You know, they're going to have to hope they can, you know, make a trade or two. You know, this, I was going to say this summer, but the offseason is now like next month.
Right.
So in the
over
next
Christmas.
Months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On Christmas Eve, Santa will show up and take Tobias Harris away.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, for Philly, I think an experienced guy like that, you know, is really the best case scenario. You know, the fact they moved quickly shows they're probably willing to pay him what he wanted pretty quick. You know, probably the best coach on the market. You know, to me, it makes total sense. You know, will it be what fixes it? No, but again, I think it's wrong to characterize Philly as like an unstable coaching situation. I mean,
right.
Brett was there for 6 years, right? So, but it was time for a change. And you know, Doc, obviously, a lot of people were surprised about him getting, you know, fired in LA, and you know, for him to just bounce right back and get, you know, a good job is good for him. So, you know, hopefully it's a better marriage.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, roster and front office issues aside, I think Doc is a good hire in the sense that I think Brett Brown wasn't exactly beloved by the end of his tenure in Philadelphia. Obviously, I think his problems with Jimmy Butler are the most famous, but I don't know that he necessarily had a great relationship with Simmons and Embiid as well. I mean, Simmons was someone who he's kind of, I wouldn't say called out publicly, but chastised publicly for not shooting threes. You know, Embiid, I think he's challenged him as well to get his conditioning right. I do wonder if Doc will maybe have a better time getting through those guys. And just to shake up for them, a new coach, you know, making them understand the gravity of the situation, maybe help them take the next step in their respective careers. It is interesting to me. I think the team still has some questions in the front office. What's Elton Brand's role going to be moving forward? Usually you want to kind of get that stuff in order before figuring out who your coach is going to be. So I think there still might be some questions about the front office and what they want the structure to be. Can I run you my idea of what I would do if I was in charge of the Sixers?
All right.
I think you have to accept that you're going to take a loss on one of these trades in terms of, you know, you're not going to get back a great contract. But I think what you need to do is find a way to move, especially Al Horford. I don't know if you're going to get anyone to take Tobias Harris's contract. I do think Al Horford is still popular around the league. But you have to move them with the understanding that you're going to have to take on another team's bad contracts. But Philly needs to make trades that are like, I'm trading one player for three players. You know what I mean? They need depth. They need to find shooters. They need to find role players, guys that they can kind of slot in and around Embiid. It's not going to help their cap sheet, but I think they're, what they need right now more than anything is roster balance. So is there a trade out there? You know, the Kings, for example, were interested in signing Al Horford for a while. You know, the Suns are a team that's always looking to be respectable. Can you get, you know, one of these franchises that don't typically sign free agents? You know, maybe even the Nuggets, a team like that. Can you find a way to get two or three pieces in return for one of those guys? I think that has to be the way they look at this offseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, that is, you know, if there's any way to trade Tobias, you know, on this deal with 4 years left, it's, you know, you find a deal, you know, to a team that, you know, isn't going to attract a free agent, that isn't as concerned with tying up some of that money, you know, just given the circumstances, right? If there's a team that's willing to take that, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty hard. I think Horford will be easier to move just because you kind of know what he's going to give you. You know, I think he still has something in the tank. He'll help someone. And then his, I think the last year of his deal is a partial guarantee. It's just a little cheaper. But you got to do something. And yeah, again, like you said, I mean, not only that, but I mean, you know, these guys are, the value diminishes a little bit every year. You know, and the uncertainty with the salary cap right now is going to make it, it might make it tough because there are a lot of teams that are, you know, if the cap drops and a lot of teams go into the tax, it's going to be, going to be tough. It's, you know, we have to see what happens with that.
Right.
But
so here's one, yeah. I'm just pulling out of my backside right now. Assuming you get the salaries to line up, and I think they might already, Al Horford for Gary Harris.
I mean, I don't know if I'm, why does Denver want Horford though? Like,
I mean, they're going to probably lose Millsap, and I understand you're going to want to re-sign Grant as well, but maybe Horford becomes your backup center. You know,
I don't know if I want to pay him like that, though, because I just don't. I mean, if you saw, he doesn't really fit with Embiid, right? So it's like, right, if you're playing two centers, if you're playing Embiid, Jokic, I think that's, I don't know if that works. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but it's an idea.
it's the first one. It's the first one.
Yeah.
What's your outlook for Philly? What do you want to do if you're them? Because it's crazy. They had a great lineup in 2018. They had a pretty good lineup in 2019. And then this year turned out to be a disaster. They kind of basically choose the wrong door every time. But there's a formula for Simmons and Embiid working. They only just have to look at the 2018 team, which had one of the best five-man lineups in the league when they had Covington, Redick, and Dario Saric around those guys. Do you see a path for them to kind of get back to that kind of group?
Yeah, I mean, I think off the top of my head, I'd have to look at trade possibilities. Uh-huh. Right? But, like, I mean, you have to hope that you can move, you know, at least one of Harris or Horford. If you have to, you know, they have 21 in the draft. If you have to attach a pick to get off a contract, I mean, is that enough? Maybe not, but, or maybe you know, do a deal with a team that has cap space. Like, you know, say, I mean, the Knicks probably won't. I mean, like Knicks or Atlanta, if you can, you know, do a team like that or do a deal with a team like that, create a trade exception and you know, you can take players back into it. Like maybe that's something they explore. Like I haven't done the math on this at all. Right. But like, you know, if you can find a way to create a trade exception, that lets you bring back, you know, a different player, you know, that's one way to get creative with it.
Does them hiring Doc make you kind of think that they are going to commit to Simmons and Embiid for another year? Because, you know, D'Antoni, I think obviously people are speculating that it will result in some kind of stylistic change. Bringing Doc almost seems to me like a way of saying, how do we get a coach in here that can get through to both of these guys at once?
Yeah, I mean, look, both those guys are still under contract for the long term. You know, Simmons, his new deal kicks in just next year. So it's like, I don't think, you know, when if and when that happens, and it may still happen, but I think right now when you hire Doc, it sends the message to those guys too, to your star, just like, hey, we paid for the best coach in the market. You know, you're saying, you know, we're going to run this back. We're going to figure it out. So, you know, I would be surprised for sure if it happens right now. But again, it really depends on, there's so many variables here with, because it, sure. their cap situation is so tough, and it's such a tough year for teams financially, but also there are a lot of teams trying. Like, that's the one thing that's going to help them.
Right.
Because if you look around the league, I mean, there are a lot of teams that can make the playoffs next year. And so maybe someone does see, you know, in lieu of a great free agent class, and you have cap space this year. I mean, maybe Horford, you know, is a guy. It's not a huge long-term commitment. You know, maybe he's a guy who can help you get over the top if you need a vet, if you're a young team, right? So, you know, they have to be creative. They got to explore all these avenues, which is obvious, but true.
It is going to be such a strange offseason. You know, you bring up the salary cap. That's going to be a real fascinating wrench, and the front office is like to plan, you know, sometimes 3-5 years ahead. It's really unclear if what it's going to look like. Is the league going to flatten it, you know, almost credit teams and kind of keep it flat for 3 or 4 years. The financial ramifications, even though we've had a season of what happened this year because of the pandemic, are going to be fascinating from a front office standpoint. I want to get to Kyrie Irving for a second, just providing some levity in the midst of a kind of sad finals and coaching hires. I guess he's on a podcast with Kevin Durant. I don't know. Every NBA player has a podcast now, or like everyone has a media company. I don't know. Anyway, on some podcast, I think Kyrie Irving said something along the lines of, we don't have a head coach. You know, I look at KD as someone who can be a head coach. Maybe Jacques Vaughn is a head coach for one night. Do you think Steve Nash like appreciates the situation he's walking into?
Man, you know, I think it's probably a mistake to, like, it's okay for us to laugh at that, but it's probably a mistake for us to read too much into it. But I mean, there obviously isn't, you know, given who it's coming from and the context, it's like, yeah, you know, it's worth a chuckle. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe he's trying to throw Jacques Vaughn a bone, right?
Like, right. Yeah, there we go. Okay. That's a good, look, like, positive spin.
I don't think Steve, spin. If I'm Steve, I'm like, you know, whatever. I mean,
right. Yeah, I mean, he was
the coach
imagine,
they wanted. So,
right. You have to imagine he's also heard all kinds of stories about Kyrie Irving. Listen, I like Kyrie Irving a lot, whatever his situation is. I kind of appreciate that he's an agent of chaos. I appreciate how outspoken he is. You know, the flat earth thing was its own kind of controversy, but outside of that, like, I don't really have an issue with him. It's just funny how the goofiness always follows KD and Kyrie around. They haven't even, you know, both of them realistically haven't played much basketball in the last year, but generate, you know, as many headlines as any other player. It's just funny how those two always seem to be popping up in a situation like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if you create a podcast for yourself, you know, that's what tends to happen. So,
yeah. Listen, Kyrie, if anything, come on and say it on the SI Daily Pod. You know what I mean? We could use that kind of controversy. Real quick, just because we're talking about them, are the Nets like a sleeping giant, like sleeping title contender that no one is talking about? I'm curious if you have any kind of handle on what their outlook is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they'll be a top three, top four team in the East. I don't want to say they're a contender yet, just because they literally haven't played together at all. And again, like, you know, KD is still coming off the injury at this point. He's pretty well removed from it now.
Mm-hmm.
But like, contender is a big word, and I don't know if I would like foist it on them. But they'll probably, my guess is that by the time next season starts, like, they will probably be viewing themselves that way. Because, right, that's what they came there to do. So.
KD will certainly have had, you know, maybe the most time anyone's ever had to recover from an Achilles injury. Before we get out of here, I want to just go back to the finals real quick. Are you giving the Heat any kind of chance in game 2/the series? You know, do you expect to see anything wildly different in game 2? What's your gut telling you right now?
I think that, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they do. I think they'll do something different. Like, at this point, there's no pressure, so that helps. I think there's a chance they steal a game. Just because, again, like, LeBron's locked in, but, you know, the other guys still got to make shots, and you know the finals are always a little weird. Now at this point, like, I think I'll be surprised if it goes more than 5 games. Mm-hmm. Now, if I had to like readjust what I said, Lakers in 7. Now I think it won't be that long, but
Yeah, I will say there is a tiny bit of pressure on Eric Spoelstra in this regard. He's 1-5 in his last 6 finals games, and that average margin of defeat is 18 points. I'm not saying Eric Spoelstra is a bad coach. I've obviously been a big Eric Spoelstra fan for a long time, but I do have to think he's going to come up with something, because it's been a long time since he's looked confident and or in control of finals games.
Yeah, no, that's true. And, you know, that's something I was going to make the same point talking about Doc and how he keeps blowing 3-1 leads in the playoffs. It's like, yeah, you know, those things happen. But at some point, it's like, how much of this is circumstantial? You know, how much of it is in his control? And so I'm always like, when people point out things like that about coaches, I'm like, yeah, those things happen. But at the same time, you know, I mean, how many, you know, again, you don't get that many bites at the apple, but like, sometimes these things are not their fault. So, yeah, there's no real great answer. hopefully the Heat, you know, will put up a fight, and we'll have a more interesting conversation, you know, for the next week or so.
Well, we'll certainly hope so. We'll have to see what happens in games 2 and 3. Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us again, man. We really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm going to go eat the rest of these Kit Kats.